The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome. The last, my throat's a little... Last time I was here, I talked about dukkha, this Pali word that is usually translated as suffering. And this is the kind of one of the central collecting points or gathering points of the teachings the Buddha offered. He at one point said, "What I teach is suffering and the end of suffering." And so it's a pretty central concept. And I began exploring it last time through the perspective of how we suffer, ways that we get caught. And as I also mentioned last time, there are different ways in the texts that have come down to us as the word of the Buddha, there are different ways that this word is used, that this word dukkha is used. The first way is the way I talked about, or one of the ways is the way I talked about last time, that essentially the experience of suffering, and that word suffering in English is a bit strong. I mean, the Pali term dukkha encompasses a range of experience. And the word that we use, suffering, in English is usually a pretty strong word. We when we use that word, suffering, we're usually talking about something that's fairly intense. And yet the Pali word dukkha encompasses a range from the mildest stress to the most extreme agony. And so the one of the ways this term is used is in terms of our experience of suffering from the, in that range, from the mildest of stress through, we can just name some emotions like irritation, annoyance, confusion, anxiety, hatred, rage, wanting, a whole range of experience is included in this term, dukkha. So that's what I explored last time. And this time I'd like to point to particularly one of the other ways that this word is used and how that connects to our experience of suffering. But I'll just mention now the three ways that this word is used. The first way is this way that I just mentioned, that in our experience we have the experience of suffering. We meet experience and we react to it. Reactivity is another word we could use for this kind of dukkha. A second way is simply pain or unpleasant experience. That's another way this word dukkha is used. And that refers to anything, like you cut yourself with a knife and there's painful experience, there's painful sensation. It's just the way the body is designed, right? We fall down, we bruise our knee, there's painful sensation. That experience of pain and of unpleasantness is also used, this word dukkha is also used for that. And we can begin to explore and understand that the reactivity can be one of the ways that the experience of suffering, of dukkha, of stress, of anxiety, of suffering, of distress, of unease, can be related to the experience of unpleasantness. And that's the first kind of dukkha that I talked about last time, that a reactivity due to unpleasant experience So there's something unpleasant in our experience, and we don't like it. We want to get rid of it. We want to fix it or change it. And that kind of contracting around, not okay to have this unpleasant experience, need to do something about it, that's a form of this other kind of dukkha. So from this just simple experience of unpleasantness can be born this reactivity of stress, dukkha. I'll just use the word dukkha because it does just encompass such a broad meaning. So that's the second way the word dukkha is used. The third way that the word dukkha is used is, it seems to be something along the lines of unreliable, that it's talked about in a way as what could be called a characteristic of experience. That whatever experience we have, and we'll back up a little bit, whatever experience we have, the sound of the train, a body sensation, it's impermanent. All of our experience appears and disappears. There's nothing in our experience that is lasting. Emotions come and go, thoughts come and go, body sensations come and go, experience in the world comes and goes. So every experience, everything, if you just check it out for yourself, what experience are you having right now? And maybe a certain kinds of emotions can feel fairly strong. I mean, I know in my life, for instance, the experience of being miserable. I used to really identify with being miserable. And, you know, pretty much any time I looked, it was there or seemed to be close by. And so it seemed to have a real solidity to it. It felt like it was very, very strong. And yet, there were times when I wasn't miserable. And so it was impermanent. It came and it went. But my mind wouldn't really acknowledge the coming and going of that miserableness. Because when I noticed, well, yes, I'm not miserable now, it was more like, well, yeah, I'm not miserable now. But what I really am is miserable. So in effect, my mind kind of created a solidity around that miserableness. And so check in for yourself. Whatever experience you are having, it does come and go. And because of that coming and going of experience, you know, in some ways that coming and going of experience, it works in our favor with things like miserableness, right? I mean, when the miserableness goes, there's kind of a release, a feeling of not being miserable. Or when unpleasantness goes, there's a release from the unpleasant experience. And yet, what we seem to do in our lives is, when there is experience that we like or that we're seeking for or that we want, there's a kind of a hope, let's say, a hope that somehow that will be reliable for us, that will be the place where we can find happiness, that somehow that getting that thing or having that relationship or having that person feel this way about me, having people see me in a certain way, will bring some kind of lasting happiness. And yet, because everything changes, everything is impermanent, there's nothing in experience that has the capacity to be reliable. Nothing in experience that has the capacity to be a lasting source of happiness. And so this truth, this is this other way this word dukkha is used. Unreliable. All experience is unreliable in that It's not a place on which we can say, yes, this experience, this is where I will find it. This is where I'll finally be happy. I'll finally be okay. And so this is what it's called sometimes the characteristic of dukkha. So from this standpoint, I mean, from this exploration, everything that we experience has this characteristic of unreliability. It's regardless of whether we're reactive to it, regardless of whether we're suffering around it in the moment, whether we're experiencing suffering around it in the moment, the experience itself will pass and is therefore unreliable. So an exploration around this is really, it's kind of orienting our minds to a different perspective, a different way of looking at the world. We tend to kind of see our world through this view or this filter that there's got to be something out there that will make me happy. And even if it isn't something, because we do at some deep level understand this truth of impermanence. We do, at some level, understand that. It's not like fully understood. And yet we do recognize, I mean, if you ask anybody, you know, pretty much on the street, you ask them, do things change? It's like, well, yes, of course, things change. And there's a story in the Hindu epic Mahabharata, where one of the characters in the story is asked, what is most amazing? What is the greatest wonder? And the person responds, the greatest wonder is that people every day are confronted with and see the truth of death, and yet it doesn't enter their mind that they too will die. That it only enters the surface of the mind. It doesn't penetrate very deeply. So this truth of impermanence, we do know it at some level. We do recognize it. And yet at a kind of a very central kind of core place in our minds, there's some kind of belief or thinking that, yes, there's got to be something out there. And if it's not one thing, if it's not just one thing that will make me happy, then there's got to be a way in which to construct having that thing. And just as that thing is falling apart, to get the next thing that will make me happy. And just as that's falling apart, to get the next thing that will make me happy. We kind of think that that would be a successful life if we could have this string of getting what we want. Kind of its unending string of those kinds of moments. And so we are essentially orienting our lives trying to find happiness amidst the unreliable. We're trying to find happiness by holding on. It's like, kind of like we're playing this juggling game. It's like, oh, I'll hold on to this happiness, and then, oh, that one's falling apart. Oh, let me find the next one. So we have this perspective, this orientation. We're looking at the world from that perspective, but there's got to be some place that there can be a reliability, or some place where there can be a place of happiness. This is a kind of a fundamental distortion of how we see the world. We take things, one of the ways this distortion works is we take things to be reliable when they're not, or we feel that they should be reliable. And if we see that they're not reliable, then we either feel like it's somebody else's fault that they're not reliable, or we've done something wrong that it's not reliable. Rather than kind of recognizing just this inherent unreliability, We fight against this truth of unreliability. And that rub is experienced as this other kind of dukkha, the dukkha of the experience of suffering. There's a comic that I like that kind of highlights some of these perspectives, this perspective of like we feel like something's wrong and it's either somebody else's fault. If in preference sometimes it can be like if it can be somebody else's fault, that's better than if it's our fault. Here's a comic. This is Pearls Before Swine. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this comic. There's all kinds of beautiful wisdom in this comic strip from time to time. Mouse is sitting at a desk, and he's writing a letter. Dear life, I am writing to you to express my dissatisfaction. First, I didn't ask to be here. You put me here. So blame, right? You put me here. That started us off on a bad foot. Given that rocky start, I think you'd strive to be a good host. But no, you fill this place with unpleasant surprises. And if that is not enough, at some point, I apparently cease to exist in a manner that is most likely shocking, painful, and tragic. Can you say ripoff? Please provide a refund. And then Pig walks up and Mouse turns to Pig and says, where does one send one of these? This is our orientation. We feel like it should be happy. It should be something else. So one of the things about this rub... Mouse here is experiencing the rub, is that it's actually a direct pointer to this truth that things are unreliable. And so we have this truth of unreliability, and our minds are kind of rebelling against that truth. We don't like it that things are unreliable. We want it to be some other way. And yet, it's interesting that as we, it sounds on the surface of it, perhaps, that if we were to really accept things to be unreliable, you know, accept that truth of unreliability, wouldn't that be just so depressing? I mean, that's what Mouse thinks, right? It's like, this is not acceptable. That things are unreliable. And if we were to accept that truth from the perspective of the mind that thinks finding reliability is where happiness can be, boy, does that sound depressing that things are not reliable. It seems like it's just wrong. It shouldn't be that way. And yet, the paradoxical thing is that when we begin to actually come into truth with that, alignment with that truth, when we begin to not be rebelling against it, but opening to the unreliability, there's an ease and a peace that happens. It's not an ease and a peace that comes from having something. It's an ease and a peace that comes from letting go of trying to find happiness in ways that it can't be found. And there's a way that as we really deeply recognize the unreliability, based in that impermanent nature of experience, as we recognize that unreliability, the mind stops trying to create happiness based on unreliability. A simple example, I was reading some words from Joseph Goldstein yesterday and came upon this example, which is beautiful. It's a beautiful example of how we can, how seeing the unreliability very deeply can begin to help decondition our desire to find happiness in the unreliable. He says, Have you ever gone to a stream and tried to grasp a bubble in the water with the hope of holding on to it? Probably not, because you clearly know that it's just a bubble arising and dissolving. Everything is like that. It is possible to see this, to experience it in a deeply integrated way. When we develop this clarity of vision and understanding, then the mind is much less inclined to grasp. And so when we deeply understand the unreliability, the mind is much less inclined to try to find the reliable in the unreliable. And so part of the exploration here is to see, where is it that we are trying to find happiness? Where is it that we are looking for happiness? This will begin to point us to where it is that we are looking for things to be reliable. So, what is it that we want? What is it that we want? I'll name a few that I have explored, seen. There's material things that we want. This is kind of an obvious one. You know, we want a particular living situation, or, you know, a particular house or a particular apartment, or maybe we want a particular mode of transportation, a car. So what is it that we want? And what is it that's underneath that wanting? So, you know, exploring the ways that we want. You know, sometimes I find that underneath wanting things, directly connected to this sense of unreliability, is a sense of vulnerability, a sense of fear, of needing to have something to just stop this flow of change, to just stop this sense of unreliability. Because we are, you know, rubbing against that truth of unreliability. And so, what is it that we want? There's so many things that we want. The material things. We want to have certain material things. We want to get rid of other things. Things that we like, things that we don't like. We want to be seen or recognized. This is a big one for us, I think. You know, we want to be seen in a particular way as being competent or effective or lovable or what? Name some. You know, how do you want to be seen?
Strong.
Intelligent. Creative. Kind. Loving. So all of these ways we want to be seen, there's nothing wrong with, like, there's nothing wrong with being kind or being loving or being creative or being strong, and yet wanting to be seen that way is depending, essentially, is placing our happiness, placing the possibility for our happiness on somebody else's opinion. How reliable are other people's opinions? You know how reliable your own opinions are. So, So placing, you know, where is it that we're placing happiness? Where is it that we are, you know, how do we want to be seen? This is a really interesting exploration. So sometimes there's a kind of a new age teaching. You know, we get the lessons we need. This is actually true. We do get the lessons we need. Although I don't see it as being some kind of external force of the universe, like providing the lessons we need. It's more that what's happening from my own exploration of this process of getting the lessons I need, what's happening is that my mind is meeting the world. And it rubs up against this truth of unreliability over and over and over again and reacts to that truth of unreliability. There's certain ways each of us react to that truth of unreliability. Hence, we each get the lessons we need. It's our own mind that we are meeting when we experience suffering. And our own mind's reaction to this truth of unreliability that we are meeting. And so as we meet suffering in our experience, it's like so close to that truth. It's so close to that truth. And so if we can open to how we are suffering, how we are reacting, how we want things to be a certain way, how we don't want things to be a certain way, when we can open to that truth, we are beginning to explore the way our mind reacts to that truth of unreliability. If we can explore and open to the ways that we react to that truth of unreliability, we begin to start to meet that truth of unreliability. We begin to more fully get it, that things are unreliable. It's not our fault that things are unreliable. That is such a relief. You know, it's not our fault that things are unreliable. They just are unreliable. And again, as we open to that truth, it's not actually depressing. We can kind of go through the place where it feels like, you know, some point of our mind just, you know, it starts to see this truth of unreliability and goes, boy, I sure wish it weren't that way. And yet more and more we get close to that truth and the mind begins to let go of trying to make things be reliable when there's no way to make them reliable. And what a relief that is. What a relief it is. This doesn't mean that we just sit back and don't do anything. You know, sometimes the teachings of the Buddha can be heard from that perspective. I think it's because we bring our habitual perspectives to hearing the teachings. And so, you know, we hear, don't try to make things be reliable, but open to the truth of unreliability, as being don't try to do anything. We hear that somehow. I think because we have this perspective of, you know, our habitual perspective of this is how happiness can be found. So it doesn't mean that we just sit back and like a lump on a log saying, oh, yep, things are impermanent, things are unreliable, people are suffering out there. You know, it's not that we just sit back and let things happen to us. But what is true is that we open to and fully understand the truth of unreliability. And opening to that truth of unreliability, you know, Joseph used the example of not trying to pick up bubbles in a stream. And, you know, that doesn't quite evoke the, emotional response that comes when we fully open to this truth of unreliability. Because when we fully open to this truth of unreliability, compassion is the result in the heart. The heart that is uncontracted around unreliability also feels a deep compassion for oneself and for others in the face of this truth. And compassion is not an inactive emotion. Compassion is an emotion that opens the heart and, in a way, impels us to act, to do our best to alleviate suffering in the context of fully understanding unreliability. And so it's not a compassion that comes with delusion, but it's a compassion that is joined with wisdom. And the heart can act from that place of compassion without pushing away or ignoring that truth of unreliability. So I want to leave more time. I can always talk, but I want to leave some time for exploration, for comments, questions. How do you experience this kind of looking for places to be reliable in your own life? Yeah, and use the mic.
When I come up against recognizing something as unreliable, if I sit with it, I'll find that it's having had an expectation that it should be different than what it is.
Yes, yes. So that's a beautiful recognition, because then, you know, that's a direct opening to the truth, essentially, that, you know, our hearts want things to be another way. And the reality is, well, actually, it's not that way. There's one story, I think it was Yvonne Rand told this story of one of her insights around this. And her daughter was doing some things that she didn't like. And at some point she saw in her mind this thought: I'm not the kind of person who has a daughter like that. And then she noticed that thought. She said, well, look again. You know, this is the truth. And so again, it's like coming into alignment with the truth. And from that alignment, we can more skillfully understand how to step forward. You know, when we do, oh, it's actually like this right now, as opposed to trying to overlay so many different opinions and ideas of how it should be and trying to act from that place, fully opening to how it actually is right now gives us really good information about how to be skillful about acting in the next moment. Thank you for that.
Without putting myself on a pedestal, I would like to suggest that I have been a very reliable person over my life. Indeed, last week someone told me that when I went to a monthly meeting that I am the most reliable attendee in this group. So apparently it has continued. But I suffer, I believe. I stress myself out at times by trying to be very reliable.
Yep.
Which is a little different take than, although it's very related to being or relying on something external.
Well, it's very similar. Let's see, I gave an example around my miserableness and the effect. You know, it's kind of like it's an identity essentially. And it's again, it's wanting to be seen in a certain way. That's what I pointed to a little earlier. It's like wanting to be seen as loving, kind, creative, strong, reliable. And so there is a kind of reliability that you manifest. Yet, as people recognize that, it's like, oh, I like it when people acknowledge that I'm reliable. More of that, please. More of that acknowledgement. And then we take it on as something that we are and try to, we hold to it.
My first reaction last week was, I don't think I'll come to the next monthly meeting. There's something about, you know, that no center in us.
Yes. It's true. Yeah. And you know, that I mean, it can be interesting to play the edges of those sometimes, you know. If you find, you know, in a simple way like that, that it doesn't have to be, you know, like you're like falling off the you know, I mean, like, you know, certain kinds of commitments might not be so helpful to play with around like this. Like if you've committed to taking somebody to the airport at 6 o'clock in the morning and you decide that morning, well, I think I won't be reliable this morning, you know. That's not so helpful. But, you know, something like, you know, going to a meeting, you know, it's like you could play the edges around that. Play the edges around some of those identities and see where does it rub. You know, how does it feel? And this points to something else that's interesting, kind of in a variety of ways, that the small ways that we suffer, you know, the little ones, like, I don't know if it would be a suffering. It might be a kind of like, yeah, I'm not going to be reliable, you know, so it might not be felt as suffering. But there could be some small way in which you recognize, gosh, I told that friend that I would get together with them today, but I can't do that. And you have to call them up and tell them that. You know, it's like, just the other day, I had to cancel a retreat that I was scheduled to teach in 2016. And this is the first time I've canceled a retreat that I've committed to somebody else that I was going to be teaching that retreat. And there was a rub there, you know, it's like, I didn't like the perception of being an unreliable person, of being someone who cancels on people. And yet I clearly saw that I just couldn't do it. And so that's a little rub. It wasn't a big rub. You know, it wasn't a major one, but there was a little rub there. And this is like, this is interesting. You know, there's a little bit of a struggle there with that exploration of telling somebody I'm not going to be reliable. And so the small ways that we suffer, you know, this was a small one. The small ways that we suffer are often a little easier to connect with because they're not like the big meltdowns, right? But don't just think, oh, you know, I don't need to worry about that, you know, kind of telling yourself, oh, okay, I have to call that friend and tell them I can't do that. And then there's this twinge, and you think, oh, it's not a big deal, it's really okay. You try to convince yourself that, you know, it's okay. And it is, it's okay. I mean, it's okay that I had to cancel that retreat. Ultimately, it's okay. You know, there's 18 months, 19 months for them to find somebody else. You know, so this kind of thought was going through my mind, trying to make myself, convince myself that I shouldn't feel that rub. And so we can relate to that by like trying to kind of lay over other beliefs, other ideas, other views on that rub and not really meet that rub. And so it's really helpful, you know, when we are experiencing those small rubs, open to them. It's the same pattern at work in our minds in the small as in the large. And the more skill we get at opening, that feels uncomfortable. Okay, what is happening there? It's wanting to be seen in a certain way. What is happening there? Why? Why do I want to be seen in that way? So exploring that rub in small ways really supports us to develop the skill to meet the larger ones. And they're very similar kinds of patterns. So, yeah, thank you for that. Yeah.
This is interesting because this is a more
challenging interpretation of dukkha than the one I encountered in an audio lecture online this past Sunday, or maybe it was yesterday, I'm not sure. But the audio I was listening to this weekend said that a good translation of dukkha was unsatisfactory. And that's pretty good, I assume. But in a way, saying it means unreliable is just a little bit spookier and a little harder to dig into. Because when you say unsatisfactory, you think of consumable things like, you know, food or creature comforts. But when you say unreliable, then you're talking about whole situations and processes. And
indeed.
It cuts a little bit deeper.
Indeed.
Than unsatisfactory.
It also points, I think, a little bit more deeply to some of the places we hold. So, for instance, you know, you might think, yeah, having somebody see me as lovable, see me as reliable, that's pretty satisfactory.
Okay.
But...
Or satisfying.
It's satisfying, yeah. It feels like it's satisfying. I mean, it's like hard to convince myself that that's not satisfying. But reliability, we may be able to meet that or recognize, yeah, somebody else's opinion, that's not reliable. You know, so it kind of, I think it comes in a different doorway. Of understanding. So, you know, explore your experience from this perspective. You know, the Buddha actually points us to, you know, in looking at our experience, you know, saying, okay, where are we trying to find happiness? He has a three-part teaching around where we're trying to find happiness. And he says the first thing that we need to explore or understand is... how this exploration or how this thing is gratifying. So, yeah, having somebody see me as reliable or as lovable or creative feels good. So there's a satisfying quality to that. There is a kind of happiness that comes with that. So it's not denying that the teachings of the Buddha around this are not denying that there is a kind of happiness to be found amidst the unreliable. He just says it's not a lasting happiness. It's not a reliable happiness. And we are often exploring it or thinking that it is more reliable than it isn't. And so the first part of it is to explore and understand, how is there happiness? You know, what is... So it's not to jump over that. It's not to try to convince ourselves, oh, you know, liking that feeling of somebody thinking I'm reliable, I shouldn't like that feeling. But no, exploring that feeling, the liking itself, exploring that, oh, yeah, it feels good to have some. Ooh, it feels like I'm puffed up. Ooh, I feel, what is that experience? And then also to explore, the second part of this, is how far does that gratification extend? How long does it last, essentially? How reliable is it? And this points to the second aspect of this three-part teaching, the gratification, the danger. The danger is that we count on things as being reliable when they're not. And so we start to orient and see, oh, okay, yes. So there are ways that I'm looking for happiness. There is a kind of happiness. That happiness comes and goes. Oh, I don't like it when it goes. Okay, you know, that's the seeing in truth the extent of that happiness is not as long as we'd hoped it would be, and the unreliability, the danger in holding to that happiness as being a good place to find lasting happiness. The escape, the third part, the gratification, the danger, the escape. The third, the escape, is basically recognizing, and this is an interesting thing that we see, that as we start to let go of wanting things to be a certain way, there's a different kind of happiness that appears. It's not the happiness of having and holding. It's a happiness of release. And then what we sometimes see is immediately on that release, it's like, oh, more of that. How do I do that again? That felt way better than that other kind of, ooh, more of that. Ooh, and there's grasping right there. And so it's a continual exploration of the gratification. So the recognition of that, oh, that release, that's a gratification. But then jumping on it, it's immediately we jump on it, there's contraction, and the happiness of that release vanishes in the trying to hold on to it. So.
You mentioned vulnerability earlier, and as this conversation is going on, I'm thinking that the places where we're most vulnerable are the places where the unreliability hurts the most when we recognize it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So where, you know, there's so many places I see things are unreliable, it doesn't really bother me, and it doesn't touch anything deep. But places, particularly places that have to do with how I think of myself, who I think I am, who I've learned to associate with who I am, are the places I'm most vulnerable.
And that vulnerability, I mean, we each have our own vulnerabilities, right? It's like we've each been constructed in a certain way, conditioned in a certain way. And that's exactly why we get the lessons we need, because we meet that vulnerability. And that vulnerability is also a truth. You know, that it's not a mistake when we meet that vulnerability. Actually, opening to that vulnerability can be very sweet and very it can be very beautiful when we actually acknowledge our vulnerability and don't fight it and don't try to pretend we're not vulnerable and don't feel like it's a mistake that we're vulnerable. You know, I think one of the reasons it's so beautiful, just this as I was touching into that just now, the thing that I connected with is just like, yes, that truth. This being is vulnerable, as are all beings. You know, that we touch it, when we deeply touch into the truth of our own vulnerability, it's like a connection to the world and a connection to the vulnerability of the world that opens our hearts. So again, it's that doorway of compassion. We have another couple minutes if there's any other comments. Thanks.
Yeah, I was... My name's Ziva. I've only been here once on Tuesday, so I've heard your audio recordings a lot, so I'm really excited about this because I was listening to the Dukkha.
Oh, you listened to the one a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. So I'm really happy about this. And I've never thought of Dukkha in that way. I mean, using the word unreliable. And I was thinking about vulnerability and what you said. Meeting the unreliable. Yeah, then I feel vulnerable, and then I feel more compassionate. And then I thought, yeah, I feel vulnerable because it's somehow connected to what you were saying too, that we all die.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, you know that. Yeah, that everything ends and begins again, or whatever the cycle is, and that I've been feeling that lately, and trying to stop from the fear coming in when I feel vulnerable.
Well, another approach there, yeah, it's not necessarily to try to stop the fear, but it's like, oh, there's vulnerability and fear. It's like, look at this is how the mind responds when there's vulnerability. Ah, I don't like it. Want it to go away, and there's the fear around it. So it's not like trying to stop that, but then opening to that too.
Yeah.
And it's like we
then I'm vulnerable to the fear.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
So you know that And we can have reactions to reactions to reactions. And, you know, it's almost like if we try to stop something, there's a sense of pushing away. So there's an aversion to it. And that's a form of suffering itself. So it's like the feeling of vulnerability has arisen, and the feeling of fear kind of arises with it, you know, partly because we're not quite ready to open to vulnerability. And so there's this fear that arises with it, and to try to push that fear down and say, no, vulnerability, be with the vulnerability, it's like maybe your mind is ready to be with the fear around vulnerability. Mm. And to open to that.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Helpful.
So we need to stop. So thank you for this exploration on dukkha.